The son-in-law.
Okay, here we are, everybody. Today is January 6th, 2016, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues in Houston, Texas, for our weekly lunch and learn in Parshat HaShavua. And today we are going to look at a very interesting theme that emerges from the entire Exodus saga, from start to finish. This theme is sprinkled in to the story and really gives us an interesting way to view what was going on at that time. So we're going to start at the very beginning of the story. This week's parsha is Parshat Va'era, but our talk today, our discussion today, is going to span almost the entire story of the slavery and the Exodus from Egypt. So we start in Exodus chapter 1, verse 7, which you can find on page 113.
No, not at all. I'm such a tiny little person.
Oh. Okay, so this is the beginning of the story. And in verse number 7, Paro says, well, the Torah says, Uvnei Yisrael paru vayishritzu vayirbu vayatzmu bima'od ma'od vatimalei ha'aretz otam. The Israelites were fertile and prolific. They multiplied and increased very greatly so that the land was filled with them. And then Paro, we have a new king. The question is, was it really a new king? Because it says, a new king arose who did not know Joseph. The commentaries here struggle to figure out how could it be that after Joseph had literally saved Egypt from ruin, that all of a sudden they could turn on the Hebrews so quickly and enslave them. So this verse answers the question, that it was a new king. But still, it only partially answers the question, because again, then you'd have to believe that a new king arose who had no knowledge of the history of what Joseph did. So the verse says, a new king arose, asher lo yada et Yosef, who did not know Joseph. And so the commentaries, the Rashi actually quotes two opinions. One, that it really was a new king, which I think what it means, it was a new dynasty. Right? The dynasties were changing in Egypt often. And it was a new dynasty. Maybe Egypt even was conquered by a somewhat semi-foreign power. And they really did not know Joseph. The story didn't mean anything to them because they were really new. The second opinion is that it was not a new king per se. And the king did know Joseph, but acted as if he didn't know Joseph. Meaning ignored, pretended, and in a sort of evil way, acted in a way that he did not know Joseph. So,
what else has changed?
Right, exactly. That's
you can help people all you can,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden,
they turn on
you.
Right.
You want to bring in a tax return for the next year after you helped them out to go to see somebody else.
Right, exactly. Right, they turn on you. Right, that's a good point. So it could be either one, but in any case, this new king comes in. And the reason why I think it's a new dynasty is because then what happens is this Paro says to his people, look, the Jewish people are, the Hebrews are too numerous, and we're afraid that what's going to happen, that we're going to be attacked by another, right? Just like we just attacked and won, we're going to be attacked by someone else. And you have this fifth column, right? This foreign people, and they may not like us, so they're going to join our enemies, and they'll be enemies from within. And this this attacking dynasty, this attacking nation, is going to kill us. Is going to destroy us.
Did one of the rabbis say that?
Yes, me.
That's what I was thinking.
And that's what the pasuk says too. The verse says, "Let us deal shrewdly with them, so that they may not increase. Otherwise, in the event of war, they may join our enemies in fighting against us and rise from the ground." So it's the Torah itself. This new Paro, who himself explains that he's concerned they're going to be a fifth column, that's why it leads me to believe it was a new dynasty. because this dynasty that took over now was not totally and completely settled and established, and it was a concern. So, what does this paro say? Hava nitchakma lo pen yirbe v'hayaki tikrena milchama. Let us deal shrewdly with them. Right? What does that mean? Let us deal shrewdly with them. Of course, any government wants to deal shrewdly and with intelligence and with forethought before making any type of domestic or foreign policy. So what's going on here?
Shrewd sometimes means not right. quite above board.
Exactly. So the commentaries say that what's going on here is a slow but steady sort of a descent into slavery. That first they put them to work and they paid them, and then they slowly but surely took away the various benefits that they had given them for providing service to the Egyptian nation until ultimately they were enslaved. Okay? So here we see the whole story, right, starts off with trickery. Right? The whole story, now this is tricky on the part of the Egyptians and the part of Paro. The whole story starts off with trickery, and then ultimately it goes from bad to worse, right? First, like, you can even see the descent in the verses. What verse 11, they put taskmasters over them to oppress them with forced labor, and they built garrison cities for Paro. So that could still mean that they were paid, right?
Garrison
is like a fortress. Right, they could still be paid here, right? Because what does it say?
It says that, forced labor, it doesn't say slavery.
Right, right. And in fact, sare misim, which is translated here as taskmasters, doesn't only necessarily mean a mas is a tax. So it could be they put over them someone to make sure that they were getting their money's worth. There was some sort of financial oversight over the people, but they were working and they were getting paid. They weren't getting rich on it. But they were getting paid, and then what happens? This new paro realizes, hey, this isn't working. They're becoming more, right? They're increasing, and that's going to make my problem worse, because again, if I'm attacked, I'm going to have even a larger population of people who are potential enemies. So then what does it say? Vayavidu Mitzrayim et bnei Yisrael b'farach. Here you have the word eved. Right, vayavidu. Now we're getting maybe more into a situation where there's more of a slavery situation going on. And vayimaruru et chayehem ba'avodah kasha. They made their lives miserable and bitter. It's getting worse and worse. And then what happens? He tells them to kill the babies. Right. So you see, it's slow. I think the fact that these are separated by pesukim and by paros. Recognition that his first plan wasn't working is indicative that this was in stages, right? This was going in. This was a shrewd trick that the Egyptians were playing on the Jews until they were finally completely enslaved and completely turned against the Egyptian people. Okay.
So, what's your timeline? How long?
Unclear. That's a good question. Unclear from here how much the timeline is. But there has to be enough time for Paro to realize that they were multiplying. So that takes some time, right? You have to do before you do a census, right? Between one census and the next census, you have to let some time pass before you could say that the population is growing, right? And that's what Paro. So some time must have passed. And the Jews, again, we know they have 300 years, so they have time is passing.
Sure.
That's a good question.
Besides tricking them, it helps them to control them easily. Besides just...
Right, absolutely. Them. So now this sets
Can
off...
Can I ask a question?
Pardon?
Can I ask
Yeah, of course.
Might not be related to that, but it's here in the Pasuk. What is the difference between the women, the Egyptian women, and the Jewish women? Because they said, Ki chayot hena, yiterem tavo alena mialedet ve'aladu. They are still survived. What is it?
Well, you have Paro again hasn't decreed that anyone be killed other than the baby boys. So the right,
just the baby boys.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it says in verse 16. When you deliver the Hebrew women, look at the birth stool. If it's a boy, kill him. And if it's a girl, let her live.
But they did not kill them.
Correct.
Because of whatever, they were afraid. Why did they say that? Because the Jewish women...
Right.
Different than the Egyptian.
Keep reading. Chayotena really means comparing them to be like animals, meaning just like an animal gives birth in the field without the help of a midwife, we get to the houses and the babies have already been born. Right? That's what it says. It says in the next verse.
Like we said, like the Chinese.
Now, this is a very. I'm glad you mentioned that because. What I'm trying to show here is that there's trickery from start to finish. Everyone's tricking everyone. No one is immune from being tricked, and no one is below lying. Right? Because Paro, right, and the Egyptians, we know they want to trick the Jews and slowly create a situation of slavery. What happens with these Jewish, with the midwives? Right? The midwives are told by Paro to kill every boy. So what happens?
They
don't. But why don't they?
Because they were afraid of
God. Right, meaning, so look at chapter 1, verse 17, on page 114. V'tir'ena ha'mi'aldot ha'yaladim v'lo asu kasher dibar aleihem melech Mitzrayim. The midwives, fearing God, did not do as the king of Egypt told them, and let the boys live. But they don't. Then what happens? Paro comes to them and says, hey, what are you doing? And what do? They lie to him. They lie to him. They say, it's not true, right? That by the time they get there, the women. But that's what they tell him.
Every deliverance,
right? They lie to him. They say to him, "Vatomarna hamiyaldot." Verse 19. The midwife said to Paro, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, they are vigorous. Before the midwife can come to them, they have given birth, and God dealt well." And then what? And Paro buys it. Paro says, "Oh, okay." Now, how do we know he buys it? How do we know he believes them? Well, first of all, he doesn't punish them, but there's a clearer reason. Why he believes them.
Maybe it's true.
It's not true.
No, it's not.
It says they didn't do what Paro told them to do in verse 17. V'lo asu kasher diber alehen Paro. They didn't do what Paro did. Meaning, to me, it means they had the opportunity to do what Paro did, tell them to, and they didn't do it. And what's the story they gave Paro?
No, but I mean, the women are vigorous because they're slaves, so they're getting there too late.
I don't think it's true.
Yeah, meaning, not every woman
it's possible. It's possible to read it that
Some
way. But I think
the
implication of the story, I think the implication of the story is they had the opportunity to kill the boys. Velo asu. The fact that the Torah says they did not do it. Okay. They had an opportunity to do it, but they did not do it. And what's the story they gave to him? That they came too late. How do we know that Paro buys it?
Because he revised his order.
He revised his plan. Exactly. Look at verse 22. Vayetzav Paro l'chol amo le'mor kol haben ha'yilod ha'yeorah tashlichuhu v'chol habat tichayun. Paro then told everybody, every boy that is born, by the way, Jewish
or not,
every boy that is born, you shall throw into the Nile. And he tells us to everyone. In the first, it's limited by two. He only tells it to the midwives, and it seems to only be the Jewish. When you give birth, when you help the Jewish women, the Hebrew women birth.
Yeah.
And now he expands it by two. He tells the whole nation.
But why?
Why would he do that?
Because he's losing the battle.
But why would he?
Why his own people?
That just shows.
Okay, that's good. The Midrash explains because he had some sort of vision that there was going to be a boy born who was going to save
Moses.
The Jews. A boy born who was going to save the Jews, but his magicians couldn't tell him if it was going to be a Jewish boy or an Egyptian boy, which makes sense. Why?
Joseph.
Why? Because who was Moshe?
Yeah.
He was both.
He was both. If you really think about it, the Midrash is beautiful. Paro's can't figure, Paro's Egyptians, they see a vision, but it's fuzzy. Is it Egyptian or is it Jewish? Because it is fuzzy, because Moshe is Egyptian and Jewish.
He's Egyptian by his father.
No, he's Egyptian because he's grown up in the house of Paro. Remember, Paro's daughter.
His mother.
Yeah. Paro's daughter saves him from the Nile and brings
him
up. So he's, by blood, he's a full Hebrew. Oh. But by background, he's an Egyptian. So they're like, it's fuzzy, who is it? Because it really is fuzzy. So we see, Paro now gets a taste of his own medicine. He's tricked into believing that the women are giving birth too fast. He believes it. right? Then he falls into the trap, which causes him to change his rule. Now, let's think about
but
what...
But he also doesn't say at birth. He says every boy that's born.
Every boy, right. It's a
he
much more expansive...
You don't have to be there the minute the child
correct.
Is born.
It's a much more... Exactly. It's a much more expansive decree. It's expansive, again, not only at birth, not only the Jews, and everybody is told to do this, right? He gets the whole... If you, the picture is Egyptians just walking around looking for everyone. Just look. It's like in the Holocaust, right? Looking to find Jews. Here, it's looking to find baby boys. Egypt. I mean... What's interesting is I don't know the answer to this question. It'd be interesting to find if there's any historical evidence in Egyptian documentation there's any type of revolt against a king who decreed that all babies should be killed. I don't think there's anything like that, but that would be interesting to find. So now let's think about what happens. This is really a neat twist. Paro now changes his decree from killing the baby boys to throwing them in the Nile. Okay, what is the result?
Wait, excuse me. When he changed the decree, it was by throwing them in the Nile. It was you couldn't kill them with a sword.
It says
he doesn't say.
Hayora tashlichu. Yes, the decree was throw them in the Nile.
It's okay. Killing
okay.
Them.
Yes.
But
so
did he say before differently?
Yes, before it was just kill them.
But it didn't make a difference how they killed.
Correct.
How? Oh,
right now, maybe Paro wanted to see the babies floating as proof that they were being killed. Who knows? What's the direct result of this?
Bad water. It was Moses.
The direct result of this is ultimately Moshe being saved.
That's right.
Right? Because what happens? Moshe's mother gives birth, and she's afraid to keep him because there's a manhunt out for all baby boys. So because of this decree, Moshe is saved. She puts him in a little
basket,
and she floats him down the Nile, and Paro's daughter saves him. Right? So we can look at chapter 2, verse 5.
Oh, so they followed it because they didn't kill. They put it in the water.
So here's another an element of trickery. Technically speaking, Moshe's mother fulfilled the decree. She took her son put him in the Nile.
Yeah, but not in the Nile. In our basket.
You could make, a good lawyer could make the argument that she, technically speaking, followed the decree. Right? So it's another, Paro sort of undone. It's another example of Paro being undone by his own decree. Look at verse 5, chapter 2. The daughter of Paro came down to the bathe in the Nile. While her maidens walked along the Nile, she spied the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to fetch it. When she opened it, she saw it was a child, a boy crying. She took pity on it and said, "This must be a Hebrew child." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a Hebrew nurse to suckle the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter answered, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Right. So Moshe's mother is the one who ends up being his nurse. So here again, we have Paro is being tricked. Right. It would be hard for me to believe. I don't know how this happened, but while there's a decree that all new babies be killed, there's a new baby being raised in Paro's house.
Well, hypocrite.
Right, either he was a hypocrite or she hid it from him.
He didn't know about it.
She hid it from him. If she hid it from him, it's a stretch, but if she hid it from him, again, once again, he's being tricked. This time, so the first time, Paro does the tricking. The second time, it's the midwives who do the tricking. Then you want to argue Moshe's mother does the tricking by putting him in the Nile, but not really. And then here, who's doing the tricking? Paro's daughter.
Do you know when I was learning this at school, my thought was, you mean he didn't have a nursing woman in the palace? She didn't have a nursing woman in the palace that she could have gotten?
I think the Midrash deals with that saying he wouldn't take to any of the Egyptians.
No, I was going to say that here's another chance of trickery. The Miriam said, "Wait a minute, I got my chance. I'm going to get in right there and get
right,
a nurse."
Exactly, right.
I thought,
right,
you know, I was a kid learning, thinking, there's no nurses in the palace. You know,
right.
I mean,
but they wanted a Jew.
No, they didn't. They didn't know he was.
Well, no, they knew he was a Jew because this must be a Hebrew.
She knew. The daughter.
Rabbi, it doesn't make any sense because here Pharaoh decreed all boy children should be killed.
Right.
How about if that happened, how long did it go for? Because here's all these Egyptian women having boys. You got to, yeah. One thing is you got a gap of generation.
Right.
Of no boys, you just have girls.
Right. The truth is, and it could also be, I mean, although it says all boys, it is reasonable to assume, notwithstanding the Midrash, who says it was both, it's reasonable to assume that he just meant Jewish boys.
Yeah.
Right. Even though the text is inconclusive, it's reasonable
to
assume.
Well, I think it is. I think it is conclusive.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because in the reference to everything before it has to do with Hebrew boys, not Egyptians.
And he's worried about
that
overthinking.
Right, that's true. I think that's a very, very good possibility. Okay, so.
No, he answered it.
But did you think that because all these mothers are giving, have milk, that they don't have children?
That's why I couldn't answer why they couldn't get a nursing mother in the palace.
No, maybe when you're rich, you always have some
slaves. Yeah, that's what I thought. But also,
she didn't have to take a Jewish.
Okay, let's keep going. Okay, so we have another example of this trickery. So let me just read you just a fascinating piece here of commentary. I'll translate. It's it's from the Dot Mikra commentary on the Torah. It says the story that Bat Paro saves Moshe and raises him. Hints to us about the ways of divine intervention, right? That arranged things in this fashion. That a person who wants to distance themselves from an evil outcome and does everything they can, right, in order to in fact achieve their goal. In the end, it becomes clear that specifically what they try to do to avoid the evil is that which brought the evil itself. So what's it talking about? Here we have a decree that the boys have to be thrown into the Nile. Why was that done? That was done in order to destroy the Savior, right? In order to destroy the person who Paro thought was going to be born, who was going to free the Jewish people. And it was that very decree that led to the saving of that boy and ultimately the Egyptians having to let the Jewish people go. Furthermore, Paro's daughter raised Moshe in the house, right? So in the same house from where all these terrible decrees were coming, right, it was the very same house from where the ultimate the Savior was being raised, and the pity that the Paro's daughter had on Moshe highlights the divine intervention that was taking place in the story. Again, the house was a house which was a mix, right? It was full of evil decrees of Paro, but nonetheless, ultimately, what won the day was the pity that Paro's daughter showed Moshe. So
what's the Hebrew word for irony?
I don't know, but that's what it is.
Where is something in the portion about Pharaoh having a dream?
Oh, that's not. It's in the rabbinic tradition, right?
Okay. How long did the decree go on? The whole time they were slaves, then they would have needed people to be slaves.
Right. Unclear.
The women.
Unclear. The women. Unclear. Okay, let's look at some other examples of trickery. We could look in chapter 5. This is now after Moshe grows up, and he goes to see what's going on. What does he say? 5. Afterwards, Moses and Aaron went and said, this is on page 120 on the bottom. Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, thus said the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go that they may celebrate a festival for me in the wilderness. But Pharaoh said, who is the Lord?
Where do you read? 5.
Chapter 5.
I'm in chapter 5.
Bottom of page 120.
First one.
Yes.
I thought you translate.
Who is the Lord that I should heed him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. They answered, the God of the Hebrews has manifested himself to us. Let us go, we pray, a distance of 3 days into the wilderness to sacrifice the Lord our God. That's another lie.
Days, of course.
Right? It's a lie. Mm-hmm. Moshe says, we just want to go into the wilderness, into the desert for 3 days. We can't celebrate our religious holidays in this land. We need some autonomy.
He fed him again.
Right. We're gonna go out hoping that Paro would agree. Now here,
it
Paro doesn't agree.
Like Paro is an idiot.
Right. But he doesn't agree to this. So he's not so stupid because he doesn't agree to this, right? Paro says no. Right? You can't go.
Who wrote the book?
Okay. Next, we have another example of trickery. Verse chapter 11.
What is a trickery? The word is smart.
Chapter 11, verse 1. Vayomer Hashem, page 134. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, O nega echad avi al paro v'al mitzrayim acharei ken yishalach etchem mizeh. I have one more plague, God says. I'm going to bring on the Egyptians. But before that, verse 2, Daberna ba'aznei ha'am v'yishalu ish me'et re'ehu v'isha me'et re'uta klei kesef u'klei zahav. Tell the people to borrow each man from his neighbor and each woman from hers objects of silver and gold. Borrow?
What is that?
They're not borrowing. They're taking and leaving with it. But what are they supposed to tell the Egyptians?
We're borrowing.
We just would like to borrow your silver candelabra and your gold goblet and some of your jewelry. We'll bring it back.
In 3 days.
Right? They're not bringing it back.
Didn't it belong to the Israel anyway?
There are lots of ways to justify it. But notice that's not what they said. They didn't say to the Egyptians, hey, we've been working with you for 300 years. Pay up.
Yeah.
They didn't say that. They said, we'd like to borrow stuff from you. When you say borrow, the implication is you're going to give it back. And here, obviously, they did not give it back, nor do I think they had any intention of giving it back.
There's a discrepancy here, I think.
Okay, let's see.
They're neighbors. I would assume if you have slaves, they're not living together with the Egyptians.
So neighbor does not necessarily mean
next door.
It just could be fellow, which also raises a question. It seems like a strange word to use, but it could be. We do know that in the history of American slavery, the slaves were living amongst not in the same houses,
but on
the property.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. On the property of the slave owners.
The block behind it.
Yeah.
One row and it went
Yeah,
over,
so,
right?
It depends what, sometimes slave laborers are shipped off to a different location
to
work.
The great authority ceased to be the mill.
Right.
Had envisioned it as you had these huge number of slaves building, and you would assume that this huge number would be in the separate housing.
Right.
But the overseers
right.
lived in their
know.
Neighborhood.
We don't know. It's a good. That's really good question. I'll look at that more. Let me hold on 1 second here. Give me 1 second.
Nothing.
Okay, let's look at just one other one, two other ones, and we'll to sort of complete the picture. Let's go to chapter 14.
But God wouldn't have told them this lie, right? No way.
I don't know.
He
seems like he told them to lie.
Oh, God told them to say that? It says,
Then
maybe it is borrowed in God's sense of like for the future, it could somehow, redistributed.
So far, how many years later has it been? 4,000 years?
Nothing. But there's still time.
Maybe but so far, it's a 4,000-year-old loan. It's a 4,000-year-old loan.
Eternity.
Right, so I'm not, right, I'm not saying here, no. Right, so here, I said, no one is beyond stretching the truth here, including God.
No.
God tells the Jews to tell them they're borrowing. It's possible that the Jews thought they were borrowing and that the Egyptians thought they were borrowing, but it seems clear that God knew they were not borrowing.
No.
And maybe God says,
why no?
Slavery.
Read the rest of the story.
Because the world isn't ending anytime soon.
I know, but you have to look at the story in a realistic fashion. There's no way that the stuff that they took from Egypt is going to be returned. It's over. It's gone.
Because they weren't going
okay?
for 3 days.
So,
when they were leaving,
it's gone.
But Egypt still exists, okay?
Okay, yeah, but it's you can't learn Torah thinking that 6,000 years later, we're going to return items that were taken.
Israel is still there and Egypt is still there. But
so what?
Well,
Israel will return it.
That's not the way I choose to study Torah. I choose to study Torah in a realistic fashion. And I think it's more realistic to say, yeah, they lied to them because they needed stuff to survive with in their desert, to trade with other nations with, as they were their way from Egypt to Israel. And they needed currency and precious metals. And so God said, this is the way you're going to get it. And you are going to lie to them. Yes.
But there's somewhere that, God didn't lie, they lied.
God told them to lie.
But God can't lie, right?
No, God did lie. In the Torah, God lies. When God goes to tell Sarah that she's going to have a baby, Sarah says, I'm not having a baby. My husband's too old. And then when God tells the story to Abraham, God says, Sarah said she can't have a baby because she's too old.
Is that what Sarah said?
God lied to Abraham. And so sometimes God lies.
Wow. Then people are wrong. They say God can't lie.
Okay. So let's look at chapter...
Are you allowed to lie if it's for the sake of the goodness?
Well, I wouldn't put it that simply. The rabbis learned from the lie with Abraham and Sarah that it was for shalom bayit, or to maintain...
Peace.
I'm saying not every sake of goodness, right? In order to...
It is.
Right, here, right, here it is. All I'm saying is, I agree. Sometimes, yes.
She had to have a baby.
Okay, here we go. We are in chapter 14, verse 1, which is on page 141. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, right? Tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp before Pi-Hahirot, between Migdal and the sea, before Baal Tzephon. You shall encamp facing it by the sea. Paro will say of the Israelites, they are astray in the land. The wilderness has closed in on them. Then I will stiffen Paro's heart and he will pursue them, and I may gain glory through Paro and all his hosts. So we know that God's been hardening Paro's heart all along. But what happens here? God tells the Jewish people, go back. So Paro will think that you're trapped, and then he will come after you. And then I will lead him into the sea and destroy him.
That's true.
Right? So God, right, had God not told the Jews to sort of turn back around and encamp in a certain place, it's possible that Paro would have said, okay, too late, they're gone. What happens right after that? Paro hears that they're gone, and he says, and he chases after them, and we know the rest of the story. So another example of God tricking Paro here. Now we'll look at one more. We haven't seen.
Aren't you allowed to have a white lie?
So, like, I don't want to say that it's always allowed. It's a very dangerous thing to do.
I think it also something that we think if we tell them, it'll have to be better.
Okay.
Maybe by impulse.
It's very slippery stuff. Let's look at one more interesting example of this. Okay. Let's look back in chapter 5. One more time where Moses gets into the... After Moses sees the burning bush. And what did God tell Moshe he's supposed to do?
Take off his shoes.
And then he's going to go back to Egypt. And he is going to save the Jewish people. That's what God tells Moshe to do at the burning bush. Then we'll pick up the story where Moshe goes to tell his father-in-law that he is going back to Egypt. Let me just see if I could find this. I lost the place here for one second.
Is the burning bush here in chapter
8?
No.
Hold on one second.
Could it be that?
Hold on, please, one second.
Okay, I'm not sure.
We're back in chapter 3, page 116. Right, Moshe is tending his father-in-law's flock. He sees the burning bush, and he says, I'm going to go down and save the Jews, and you're going to do it for me. Verse 10 on top of page 117. Come, therefore, I will send you to Pharaoh, and you shall free my people, the Israelites, from Egypt. And then Moshe says, no, I can't. And God says, yes, you can. And then God has to go say goodbye to his father-in-law. Okay? So let's see what he tells his father-in-law, Yitro. He goes back to his father-in-law. I got to find this. Hold on. Chapter 4, verse 18, page 119. Okay. Vayelech Moshe vayashav al yeter chotno. Right, he goes back from this whole ordeal with the burning bush, and God tells him to put his hand into his chest, and he comes out with leprosy, and now he's finally going to go. Vayelech Moshe vayashav al yeter chotno. He goes back to his father-in-law. Vayomer lo elachad na vashuva el achai ashib mitrayim. I'm going to go say hello to my relatives to see how they're doing, see if they're still alive, to see how they're faring. I don't know if it necessarily means are they still alive. It means what their, you know, situation is. And Yitro says, okay, go. That's I don't want to say a lie. I think maybe that's people take offense by saying that, but it's not the truth. Right? It's not the truth. Moshe's not going to see how they're doing. He's going to go confront Paro and demand that God lets them out. Now, we can understand certainly why Moshe wouldn't tell Yitro that he's doing this. Maybe Yitro wouldn't want him to go because he's afraid that he's going to be put in jail or going to be killed. Yitro certainly wouldn't want to go considering he's taking Moshe's going to take Yitro's daughter, Moshe's wife, and his grandchildren with him on this trip. Right? In verse 21, Yitro, Moshe, it says that Moses took his wife and sons and mounted them on the donkey. So I understand why Moshe would not tell Yitro the truth, but it's yet another example of sort of a stretching of the truth, not telling the whole truth, trickery, dishonesty, however, whatever term one wants to use for this type of thing. So we see that from the beginning of the story until the end of the story, there are these acts of deceptive actions and statements which are made by Moshe, by God, by Paro, by the midwives, by everyone you can imagine who's involved in the story.
Maybe to the Shakespeare,
right?
And then use it this way.
And then Shakespeare would say, "All well that ends well."
They would lie to you because you're not in their religion.
I mean, there are lots of different things that emerge from this. But what I've seen is an interesting point, which is all of this amounts to measure for measure. Paro started it by saying Hava Nidchak Malo. We're going to outsmart the Jews. We're going to act shrewdly by tricking them into becoming our slaves. And once he opened the door to that, he gets a taste of his own medicine and is constantly tricked and manipulated until ultimately his entire kingdom is destroyed and he's punished. The ultimate act of manipulation, right, is all the times that God hardened Paro's heart, right, took away his free will. That also is midah keneged midah, right? That's the divine version of what Paro did. Paro said, I'm going to trick the Jews into thinking that this is not as bad as it is. And God tricks Paro into thinking, maybe these plagues aren't as bad as they are. I could withstand them. It's worth it for me to withstand them. That's why he takes away his free will. So the whole thing starts with a big lie from Paro. And by the way, if you really want to go back, the whole thing starts with a big lie from Yosef's brothers.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe right. He was trying to get back
you
at them.
You could really trace it back to Yosef's brothers lying. And then who else doesn't seem to tell the truth? Yosef himself in Egypt. He doesn't, eventually he tells the brothers. He never tells Egypt. He never tells Paro who he is. In the end, he tells them who he is. But for a large part of his career,
yeah.
Although it seems to be known who he is because the butler calls him Hebrew. But there's a lot of deception going on in that story as well.
But maybe they figured that he was being too forgiving of his brothers, and like they took his side to think, no, we're going to go against the Jews because of what they did to Joseph. Maybe the Pharaoh thought that way.
But Joseph was a Jew.
Yeah, but still, he wasn't one of them. Like, they had been, his family betrayed, the Jews betrayed him, and they loved Joseph.
I mean, there are these midrashim that that attach much later tragedies because of the way that Joseph's brothers treated him. So that's an interesting interesting take. Okay, everyone, have a wonderful day.
And boomerang, I think, I forget what they call it, backlash.